Mini episode 963 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 963. We have a real special treat for you today. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris here with one of my favorite recurring guests from over a period of time, good friend, pop culture and fitness expert John Bastow. And he is coming on to talk Oscars with us, as he always does. Oscars and Emmys, and we always try to find some other occasions here as well. But, of course, you can find out about all of his multimedia projects here. Twitter.com/John Bastow. And I understand, John, that a little bit of breaking news here for the peeps. A forthcoming podcast, I guess, to be among these things. So congratulations on that. And, you know, you've always got a lot of great things going, my man.
Yeah, actually, I'm excited about that. A podcast right now with Bastow, which is going to be super cool and hopefully inspire and empower a lot of folk with personal achievements, stories, also anything for improving health, wellness, pretty much anything. I think one of the best taglines for the show is making you better in every way starting right now. So keep your eyes open for Right Now with Bastow coming up. I believe we start on air in May.
That's going to be tremendous, and I certainly hope, as a longtime fan of this particular segment here, that we get some 7-Eleven Chronicles mixed in there as well, John.
actually, with that platform, you may see some 7-Eleven Chronicles mixed in, because there will be a lot of unique and unexpected jewels. Jewels will be dropped every podcast.
I just know that whenever I'm down on vacation in Atlanta, down there with my little nephew and nieces, that I can always get a laugh out of them by reading them some 7-Eleven Chronicles. So it is something guaranteed to make everyone of all ages laugh, John.
You meet the special at 7-Eleven, which is why I go there on the daily.
Yeah, well, some of the ones that you have put out there have been not to be believed, but yeah, hearing them read as though in short story form on that podcast, I think would be a real treat.
Actually, that's a good idea. That's a good idea, because right now, to be honest with you, very few people have seen them, because you talk about them all the time when we're on the show, but they're only on my personal Facebook. They're not even on my verified public Facebook page. So it's only for, like, friends, family, and close people, and they've developed a little bit of following on there. So it'll be interesting if, you know, we have, like, readings, like, if you're having, especially if we have some of the guests read the 7-Eleven Chronicles, I think that would be really funny. I can see some of, like, the celebrity guests that are going to be on the show reading my 7-Eleven Chronicles, especially if they're reading it in a very, like, staid, monotone voice. That would be extremely funny.
Oh, man. Or if you have anybody who really has the capacity as a voice actor to really kind of get into it. Like, I'm just picturing, for example.
That would be good, too.
How about Kelsey Grammer reading one of yours? I'd pay to hear that.
Well, that would be funny. It's funny how you went straight to Kelsey Grammer, and I was thinking of Erica Jane on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. I could see her doing a pretty good job with them, actually.
I am prouder than I can tell you to be completely ignorant of that program, so I wouldn't have come up with that reference, John.
And this is why we fit together so well.
Exactly.
Yin to yang.
Opposites attract, my man. They definitely do, and we have made some great...
How can you be talking pop culture and not know at least a passing reference to The Real Housewives of one of the franchises? I mean, like them, hate them, whatever, they are a part of pop culture. It is what it is.
They are, and I've just pulled back the curtain in terms of some of the pop culture ignorance that I have as far as some of these garbage reality TV shows. But yeah, I am completely ignorant of that, and the Hot Wives franchise and all these franchises, the Wags franchise. You know, that's one that you would think that I would be aware of, because I believe Dusty Rhodes' daughter-in-law is on there. But, you know, that even that hasn't been enough to make me tune in to be able to see Brandi Rhodes on there.
Well, I have to say, if we have to have full disclosure and little-known facts, when I had to do pop culture news for the organization where I struck role, like AOL, MSN, USA Today, HuffPo, and all that stuff, the one that I would never go for because I couldn't even sit through an episode was anything with The Bachelor or The Bachelorette. And that's a huge part of pop culture. But I couldn't even stomach sitting through an episode. That sounds so horrible, but so true.
Oh, I know. Although I did retweet something yesterday.
The Real Housewives, they're entertaining, but I think because I've met so many of them at events and I know so many of them personally, I think maybe that plays into it a little bit. But, I mean, Bachelorette, that's just beyond me. I have no idea where that popularity comes from, but God bless them for doing what they do.
Although, and again, and I'm certainly not looking down on anybody who watches these things. I watch pro wrestling after all, so, you know, I'm not one to throw stones at anybody. These shows definitely have a following all their own. I did retweet something yesterday when somebody made a comment about, that Sam Nunberg is going to cap off his day by making a surprise appearance on The Bachelor. I was like, that would have been amazing to see him do a run-in.
and I would have missed it. The only way I would have found out anything about it is if it was on TMZ, Page Six, or Dish Nation.
Well, I think they would have been all over that one, given that he was having his own pop culture moment in the spotlight. But I guess that's as good of a way to kind of dive into this as anything, because when you're talking about real-world issues, it really was kind of invading the Oscars this year, and it's so weird, you know, and it's almost kind of quaint, it seems to me, that they had Warren Beatty out there, and who was the other one? Oh, Faye Dunaway as well, right?
To do Best Picture again.
And it's funny because this is one of these things.
It's a strike of genius. It's like bringing Mariah Carey back on New Year's Eve to do another performance, because everyone's like, you know, after like a horrific performance where everybody pants her in the beginning, or for instance, they read the wrong Best Picture, you bring them back to see what's going to happen now.
Here's the thing, and you're right about that, but it almost feels like it's something from another time and place after everything of the last several months here, because, again, you always get into trouble whenever you make Hitler analogies, 9/11 analogies, but I mean, in the sense that 9/11 is sort of a societal before and after point, the whole thing with Harvey Weinstein feels like Hollywood's before and after moment as far as how they conduct business on a fundamental level. You look back on that last year, it almost reminds me of the things that seem to be more important before 9/11, whether it be the 2000 election and the hanging chads, the impeachment of Clinton. There were things that people were like, we're going to be talking about these things for 50 years. And then 9/11 happens and they're kind of swept to the background. So it's like, doesn't it feel like that was just longer than a year ago, given all the changes that we've seen in the culture of Hollywood in the last several months?
I think when there's so many, it's such a huge influx of stuff happening and you're bombarded with it every day, it always seems a lot longer in time.
Okay.
I mean, especially with the Harvey Weinstein stuff, I mean, every single day it was a major star career ruin. Look what happened with Matt Lauer, for instance.
Yeah.
And that was just one day. And then all of a sudden what happens next, James Franco, but it was day after day after day. And you just waited to see who was trending on Twitter and you'd immediately go to the name and see, oh, is it another sex scandal story? Is it another abuse story? So I think when you have so many long-standing people, and remember, these are people that, before these allegations actually came to light, were revered. So you're not talking about somebody that went from obscurity to being hated or loathed because of what was found out. You're talking about somebody that went from being on a pedestal and admired for their craft and everything, to not even being allowed to go to the awards. From like being nominated from winning awards to and possibly winning awards, to not even being such a pariah that you can't even walk the red carpet. So many celebrities shunned Ryan Seacrest in the red carpet gossip now. 21 people, I think, they counted or something, actually went up to him, and so many other people and such a larger amount of celebrities, completely avoided him. And that's for something that hasn't even been proven in court yet or, shown to be accurate.
Well, and that's one of those things, too, where, again, to make that analogy to real world stuff here. It is almost like revolutions, like literally like the Cultural Revolution in China of the 70s. Like, this is a thing of like where in certain countries people would be like revered and big time powerful and all this stuff, and then like the change happens, it blows through, the revolution happens, and we don't talk about them anymore. Because you're right, you couldn't get bigger than Harvey Weinstein was in Hollywood. That's part of how he was able to get away with everything that he did, and on and on and on with so many other powerful figures. And like you said, it goes beyond Hollywood to the Matt Lauers and some of the other people that get implicated in this, ones that a lot of people found shocking, like I did with Charlie Rose. It really sort of is the whole thing of, you know, you think you know somebody from TV, but you don't necessarily know them. But the way that it happened, like you said, with Seacrest, the allegations that are out there, it really kind of put I don't know if you'd say a cloud necessarily on the red carpet, but you knew going in it was going to be different this year.
Huge. And yeah, I mean, it's more so than a cloud. It definitely, I mean, that's like not talking about the elephant in the room. And everybody, and I think it was, it must have been horrible being him in that situation, because there was so much press beforehand about who's going to talk to him. Who's going to talk to him? So it's not even more polite off that if somebody did talk to him, maybe they were like, you know, going against the movement or not, you know, believing in the movement. And then if somebody didn't talk to him, it immediately made the statement like, oh, well, they obviously believe the allegations. And meanwhile, just always remember, with any of these things that are non-proven, in this world, anybody can say anything about anyone, period. No matter. So that's why in this country, you're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty. So until somebody's proven guilty, you know, don't treat them totally like a pariah, unless you have inside knowledge that you know what's being said is being true. Because otherwise, you know, you're absolutely ruining that person's life, because other people are watching your actions and making decisions based on your actions. And if your actions are based on just hearsay or the party, you know, talk and accusations on a hot button issue, that could be ruining somebody's life.
Yeah, it could, because again, there's been such an emphasis in this moment on believing the and again, it almost sounds skeevy. People will make you seem skeevy to say alleged victims in this climate. But essentially, that's all it is until it's proven to whatever degree.
And it is. People make you feel skeevy because people like to get their opinions across, and people like to point the blame. A lot of times they want to point. I'm talking about people on social media now. You know, if somebody like defends, let's say, one of the people that's accused when there's no proof about the accusation, people will point fingers on you on social media, but a lot of them are doing it for their own selfish reasons, so that they get noticed on social media, that they might get some likes, and they might get some retweets because of what they're saying, and they might get involved in the conversation. So you've got to also understand people's emotions.
Well, we did a segment on this show right about the time the Matt Lauer news broke, and it was one that we were scheduled to do anyways, but sometimes you're going to get somebody on and it becomes super timely all of a sudden. Jack Myers, great author, social commentator, and we were going through, we were talking about this in the whole Me Too movement, and I said to him, I said, what about the guys that are going to get fingered in this thing here and thrown out there as being abusers, and they turn out not to be? And he basically just said, there's nothing you can do about that. We're going to have collateral damage, and the Harvey Weinsteins of the world have wrought a culture to where we're going to have that happen. And that's another thing that happens in the aftermath of revolutions, too. Real-life revolutions in countries is where, you know, you throw all the sinners on the bonfire here, whether they've been judged to be, you know, if you were a collaborator of the old regime or whatever, you know. I mean, you do end up getting a lot of innocent people swept up in this thing. So, you know, there is that side of the story as well. I mean, I think everybody who did any of these things, as it's coming out, should absolutely hang for it, not least of which because of the way they've made the rest of our gender look. But my heart also goes out to the people who are going to get implicated when they didn't do anything. That's wrong as well. Two wrongs do not make a right.
People get so caught up in the emotion of everything and get so caught up in the hearsay and so caught up in the sizzle of the story that they don't often look at all the facts. While there are horrible animals out there that do exactly what, you know, we're talking about here, and abusing power and engaging in sexual abuse, which is absolutely disgusting, there are also other people that, you know, somebody that could hate somebody in the limelight says, oh, well, I heard that he did the same exact thing. And then that's said to another person, and that's said to another person. All of a sudden it's picked up by one of the news services, and they go, allegedly. And as soon as you say allegedly, you're off the hook as far as libel goes. And because of misunderstood somebody, that person's career could be ruined. They're using the fervor of the situation to further their own opinions or their own goals or their own purposes.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, the excesses that come out of this thing, again, we're going to be dealing with the implications of that for many, many years to come. And you look at the red carpet, and it wasn't just Seacrest being out there. You knew it was going to be a different kind of a thing this year because there was a whole subset of the Me Too movement that was really aimed, I think it can only be said, at sort of upending the whole premise of the red carpet itself, which is to, again, it's a fashion critique. It's not supposed to necessarily be that weighty of a topic, so to speak, here. I was just recounting to a friend the other day the greatest laugh we ever had in the history of this thing here with Ashley Graham and the blood sausage joke. And, you know, I always go back to that. It's like, that's the spirit that these things are supposed to be in. You laugh at some things, you might admire other things, but the whole thing of, like, why don't they ask women their substantive thoughts when they're on the red carpet? You're upending the entire premise of what it is.
And look at what happened to that show on E! Fashion Police. I mean, Fashion Police started out being a very popular show, was on for years, you know, and then all of a sudden, even while Joan Rivers was alive, you know, got maligned because there was a change in opinions. There was a change that now all of a sudden what was funny and what was humorous and what was lighthearted poking was now nasty, mean-spirited, and spreading negativity and haters and all that stuff. And it just got to the point that as soon as you saw, like, a show like that going off the air, which, whether you liked it or not, whatever, was always a show with a mainstay, you see these types of things going more and more. And anything that's thought of as lighthearted and levity, there's always going to be somebody picking apart and saying, oh, it's negative, it's mean-spirited. And a lot of people just, and I think it goes with, I was on a show regularly called Covino and Rich, where they say something called the pussification of America.
Yep.
What they mean by that is, like, when and Gary Vaynerchuk talks about this too, and I've mentioned it a lot of times on stage, it's like giving eighth place trophies, participation event, participation awards for just participating, trying to make sure, you know, kids don't face any type of, you know, negativity or hurt in school. Unfortunately, there are going to be losers, there are going to be winners. It's just part of life. There are no eighth place trophies in the Olympics, okay? You are not going to get a participation medal, and that's not going to be equal to first place. So I think that doing these types of things and dumbing down and watering down everything so much is like making especially the youth of this country very, very ill-prepared for actual life.
Exactly, man. I think when you look at the ratings for this year's event, I think there's something of a lesson to be drawn in that because we are...
Bad ratings.
And we're a country at the end of the day that when you look at, again, the proliferation of fast food, which I know probably, you know, hurts you from the fitness side of things here, the way that we are gluttons and everything like that. But
I used to pop White Castle burgers like they were Pez.
See, I can honestly say I've never done that, not because I'm a health nut, but because I hate onions. So I've never done that.
those things are the tastiest little belly bombers you could ever have at that point.
But
you change as you want to get to a certain thing, and you want to look a certain way, and you want to get a certain certain health goals and everything like that. You change what you're eating.
Right. But that's, I mean, you know, you're proof of it just by even admitting that right there. We're a country. We like things that are bad for us. We don't like to be scolded. We don't like moralizing. And I think that you're going to find, again, there's going to be a backlash to this whole thing coming. And I'm normally the first guy to find the hole, and you see it on social media all the time. There's nothing I loathe more than backlash to the backlash guy, because it's generally just somebody looking for attention. But there's going to be a legitimate backlash to this whole thing if there's that kind of an overreach. And it's interesting because I don't know to what extent the actresses were it's so hard because with the Oscars being an event, you've pointed this out in the past, that's one of the ones where it's a little more staid, it's a little more reserved, you're not going to be finding anybody in any kind of a modified Big Bird costume out there on the red carpet.
Or being delivered to the Oscars in an egg.
Yeah, you're not going to find that happening as much, so it's hard to know how much the actresses were kind of dialing it back and how much they weren't, but I mean, you know, I did my usual prep to get ready for this thing here. I'm like, okay, what were the things people were talking about? And like, the only thing I could really kind of come across in any kind of a way was that Nicole Kidman had a dress that apparently had just a wisp of fabric that was keeping both of her genital areas from being exposed, and that seemed about it. I mean, if that's like...
I thought she was stunning. She was actually...
I'm not complaining. I like Nicole Kidman. I'm not complaining, buddy.
Because you always ask me my favorites, and actually she was one of my favorites.
Okay.
On my TV, I don't know if that was... first of all, I love both the colors, but I mean, I don't know if that was electric blue or purple. I called it purple.
Okay.
But she was stunning.
Sure.
You know, I thought she looked great in that dress. You know, and in regard to the, you know, the ladies, I don't think they... I mean, this was obviously not an event like some of the previous events we talked about when they wore black or something to, you know, to commemorate or to begin... Their commitment to, like, the Me Too, Time's Up movement and stuff like that. I mean, you had a lot of color there. You had a lot of, and it was also, I mean, a sea of regality, which I thought was really cool. I think that was the one word that described these Oscars. A lot of the ladies were extremely regal-looking, even more so than usual in their choice of dresses. I mean, look at what one of my favorites, who I adore, Tiffany Haddish. I mean, she had on... people joking on social media. Did you just come off the set of Game of Thrones? Did your dragon drop you off? Meanwhile, she was dressed in ceremonial garb, like giving homage to her Eritrean heritage. Her dad was from Eritrea, and when they found out the story, of course, you know, they would delete those tweets. But I mean, it had a regal flair to it. I mean, I thought Nicole Kidman's dress was very regal looking. And when I say regal, I'm not talking about regal like in just queens and kings, but I'm talking about a rarefied air of being very pristine, very, very ethereal, and also having an air of gravitas. And that's what I mean by regality.
Well, and again, I'm not complaining about Nicole Kidman's one because, again, she is very timeless, very beautiful. I'm all in favor of her wanting to rock something like that. The regal thing, you and I might agree to disagree on that. I don't ever remember Queen Elizabeth II rocking something with radical slits on it like that, but maybe it's just my memory being a little foggy.
As I said, that's why I use my definition of regal, saying, adding gravitas in a classy way.
Okay. I mean, I can see that sort of modified point.
I'm not talking about like MTV Video Music or Movie Awards where somebody comes, you know, dressed as the Queen of Spades. Okay, or in a big rectangular dress like it was a card come to life.
Yeah.
I'm talking about regal meaning classy, elegant, and with a tone of gravitas and you know, understated power.
Yeah, you know, to whatever degree, I suppose I could see that there. But, you know,
I thought Margot Robbie looked great with that. I love Taraji P. Henson, who's another one of my favorites. I mean, in black, she was awesome. And you know who I liked a lot and I was always rooting for because I thought she was phenomenal in the movie? I thought Allison Janney looked extremely good.
Right. She's another one that's kind of timeless, too. She always... never seems to look her age, and I mean that in a good way. I would kind of agree on Allison Janney. And
I have never laughed so hard or cringed so much at a single performance as when she played Tanya Harding's mother. I mean, that was just her performance was amazing.
Still haven't seen that, but I need to. It sounds like I really need
to. You should.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Come on. One of my favorite. You always ask me about my favorite moment in the Oscars. One of my favorites by far was when, speaking of I, Tanya, was when Jodie Foster comes up with Jennifer Lawrence, and Jodie Foster's on, crutches, and Jennifer Lawrence says, "What happened to you?" And Jodie Foster just looks into the audience and she goes, "Street, she I, Tanya'd me." And that was hilarious. Come on. That was like one of the best. Nobody talked about that. And that was, I wrote that down immediately as one of my favorite moments. I thought Jennifer Lawrence and Jodie Foster were two of the best presenters. And that when she goes, "Street," just using the last name, she iconic me. That was awesome.
That is pretty good. That is a good moment. And I saw from looking through some of your commentary on Twitter that I know that you felt that Jimmy Kimmel and what was going to be kind of a tough spot to do as far as the things he was going to have to balance this year.
God.
And of course, I read coming in as though somebody was looking to put even more weight on his shoulders here. I don't remember what publication it was in, but somebody doing a critique of him as, imagine this, the guy who was co-hosted the Man Show back in the day is hosting the first ever Oscars after the Me Too movement started. So... There was the whole weight of his own history that he was carrying there as well, hoist on his own petard, as it were. But I know you felt like, again, that he did a good job as far as balancing everything that he needed to get done as the host.
Oh, he deserved the gold. If it was the Olympics, he would have gotten the gold, because that was just navigating a verbal minefield. I mean, he's talking, he's hitting on such hot-button, polarizing issues as Me Too, Time's Up, Harvey Weinstein. He even throws in Mike Pence as a reference in there. And everything was had humor and an air, a touch of class, in the sense of, like, it was never vulgar. It was never something that, you know, immediately, you know, you could see somebody grabbing on and saying, oh, that went too far, that went too far. He was just bright. He rode the razor's edge the entire time. I thought it was a gold medal performance. And it was difficult, difficult material, because everything he touched on, there were just people waiting for him to fail.
And it's funny, too, because, you know, when you mentioned about, like, not being vulgar, it's funny how much we sort of have, you know, man show Jimmy Kimmel still in our heads. And I think, to whatever extent, how much he benefits from that as far as his air of being mischievous, because he's kind of like Howard Stern in that regard. Howard Stern, I don't think, has done anything remotely shocking in 20-plus years, but it's everybody's still like, ooh, Howard Stern, he's out there. It's like Jimmy Kimmel, before our very eyes, has gotten a lot more Carson-like, and as somebody who liked Carson, you know, there were the good things and the bad things. So when I say gotten more Carson-like, I don't necessarily mean that as a compliment. I sort of mean that as far as, like, selling out a little bit. But I mean, he's sort of gotten more in that direction without people even noticing, it seems like, because they still remember Man Show Kimmel.
Just taking something from personal example, I mean, I've now done hundreds and hundreds of reports for celebrity news and pop culture news on AOL, MSN, USA, all those different things. I've done a lot with Vine. I have done a culture pop show, which is me doing funny commentary in the streets of New York. And still to this day, though there hasn't been in serious rotation at all for over 8 years, people say, oh my God, it's a typical guy. The thing is, the thing you rise to fame with the first, like Jimmy Kimmel did with The Man Show, what brings you to public attention, is something that is going to be sticking on people's minds till the day that that generation dies, okay? And that's a good thing sometimes if you're able to reinvent yourself. If you're not able to reinvent yourself, and if you cannot establish some sort of name in another way, it's going to be a bad thing, because people are going to be always going back to it and you have nothing else to go to. Jimmy Kimmel is great, because he can now be, like what you were just talking about, how he can, like, you know, water himself down, but he still has a reputation for having an edge. A beautiful position to be in, Rick.
It is an interesting position. It is.
You can ride both sides of the fence, and if you do say something that's a little off color, or you slip a little bit, they go, well, there's the Man Show Root Show, and there's nothing wrong with that, because people are expecting it.
Well, and I guess that's the whole thing here, too. Some crave critical success above all, some crave commercial success, because I remember praising in 2010 Conan O'Brien when he started doing The Tonight Show. I was like, wow, we're not having a Letterman effect here. When Letterman went to 11:35, it was 11:35 Dave. I'm like, Conan is still the same guy he was at 12:35. And unfortunately, that didn't last very long. So my praise alone wasn't enough to keep him on the air.
I love how detailed you look into things. That's a very good point.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's pluses and minuses to not selling out. Not selling out generally means that your paychecks aren't as fat, so Jimmy Kimmel has definitely profited. It is the American way as far as advancement goes, and again, getting a platform such as this, and, you know, I think a lot of people were agreeing with your assessment of the job that he did under the circumstances, but again, this is one where it seems like it was just kind of set up to fail, as far as everybody knew going in that it was going to be kind of a dour climate, as far as, again, and it is a serious moment in Hollywood history. You know, next year's one, I'm sure it's going to be a little bit different than the ones after, but coming immediately on the heels of the Weinstein scandal and everything that followed, the very revolutionary moment, you knew it was going to be, you know, not the usual kind of hijinks all the way around. As you've pointed out, there were hijinks here and there, to be sure. But as far as, like, the tone of the show, you got to think that that's something that was kind of off-putting to people in some way, or the rating would have done better, I suppose. And there wasn't really anything, I don't think, in terms of the movies themselves. It wasn't like people were tuning in to be like, oh, I want to see this movie get recognized. So it seems like it just didn't have some of the X factor that it would have had in other years, basically, for a number of reasons.
I think, well, personally, from my my opinion, this was one of my favorite Oscars because I actually cared about the movies that were being nominated.
Okay.
I actually saw them. I mean, I saw and enjoyed, let's say, which is very rare for me to say about the majority of movies that are nominated for Oscars. Normally, the ones that win, I'm like, oh god. But what, you know, because it's something that's, you know, a critical winner, but, you know, you can barely sit through type of thing. But I mean, I saw Three Billboards. I saw I, Tonya. I mean, I was shocked to see I, Tonya nominated for so many different things. It took so long, even in the New York area, to get out in wide release. But, you know, and some of those movies were just really, I was, like, really behind them. I mean, for Get Out to be included in that, which was an amazing movie by Jordan Peele, I mean, you normally wouldn't see a movie like Get Out being nominated for an Oscar. I thought it marked a year of change in a lot of ways. I never would have, in years past, thought either I, Tonya or Get Out would be there. I mean, I would have seen Three Billboards in there all the time. And as soon as I saw that, even though it wasn't in the theaters around me, I got to go to an advanced screening, but even though it wasn't in the theaters around me that long when it was out in its first run, as soon as you saw that, I mean, I said to myself, I said, Frances McDormand's going to walk. She's going to walk away with it because she was just so good in it. And I rooted for her for that. And to be honest with you, I wasn't really a fan of her before. And it's not like I could name anything else she was in. But I fell in love with her character in that movie because of that portrayal. So I was, like, personally invested because I enjoyed the movies a lot this year. But I think, to your point, is very accurate about the ratings going down. But I think the one thing that you didn't say that a lot of people don't point out is the Oscars, generally, as a TV program, is going to suffer, as a lot of TV programs suffer, just simply by the fragmentation of the entertainment media.
Right.
People don't need to sit and watch 4 hours of the Oscars like they did back in the day when we were growing up. Okay. They could go to bed at a normal hour and get up for their jobs and read everything that happened online and any of the important clips they could look online. And what would have taken 4 hours to watch the commercials or 4.5 hours to watch the commercials and everything and the after show and everything, they could find out about in a half hour at their own leisure. And at the same time, that show is competing against other major, major shows which were on at that point, like The Walking Dead, you know, which I was actually flipping back and forth between during commercial breaks and everything, and DVR. But I think the fragmentation of the media, TV, TV just as a medium, has to face so much competition from the web, so much competition from other types of services, that people won't have to watch the Oscars like they did back in the day in order to get that type of information. They can get it on their own demand.
No, that's a very good point, certainly. And by the way, as far as Frances McDormand goes, I myself have only ever seen her in one thing. I'm hoping you were wrong when you said that's the only thing you've ever seen her in. We've all seen her in Fargo, yes? I think we can all agree on this.
No.
Really?
I speak the truth. I have never seen an episode of Fargo.
The movie, though.
I mean, only because
the movie.
I cover pop culture stuff.
Okay, not even the movie. Okay, because she was only in the...
I did not. There you go. Fargo, I knew was a movie, and I knew was a series, but I couldn't even have told you which one Frances McDormand was in without having to do research.
I think you'd like both of them.
Straight up.
I think you'd like the movie. I think you'd like the 3 seasons of the series. I'll say this. I'm just going to put this out there. Okay. I think season... Because
well, you know me well.
Fargo is done in anthology style, and I've actually reviewed the last 2 seasons of it here in the lounge. Season 2 of Fargo, I think, is the greatest anthology I've ever seen. Maybe the greatest anthology ever. It's set in 1979, okay. And it's a thing of beauty. But yeah, no, she was in the movie. Okay, so that's interesting. You haven't seen her in that. She had a great performance in it. I think you would really
I'm aware of her as a critically acclaimed actress.
Sure.
Because having to cover pop culture, I see bits and pieces of her when she's nominated for something else or when she's in something. And I know her basic personality, which I think is hilarious. And when it's parodied on Saturday Night Live and stuff like that. But as far as becoming invested in her as an actress and falling in love with a performance, I mean, she was an irascible, crazy, amazing character in the movie Three Billboards. I mean, you understood exactly why she was like that way, you know, because of her daughter's death. But the way she took matters into her own hands and the way she just never had a second thought about, following what she wanted to do, even when those things were highly illegal and many of them could have gotten her put in jail in a second.
Sure.
Was just amazing. You just fall with the balls of that character.
She's got a lot of range, and she definitely is a very good actress.
And maybe a great one.
In
Fargo, from clips I've seen, and once again, I've even told you about the series of the movie, but clips I've seen of her in Fargo, it was a totally different type of character.
Laconic, laid back, whatever, some dry wit here and there, a lot beneath the surface that you could kind of see in some scenes. But yeah, she's got some really excellent range, to be sure. So it's not a surprise to see her get recognized on a night like this. And we've talked about some of the great moments during the ceremony here, some of the funny things that you had found in terms of watching it. In terms of the awards itself, bringing it full circle, what were some of the things you found to be noteworthy as far as some of the award recipients on the evening?
As far as the recipients?
Yes.
Once again, since we're on the topic, and then we'll move on to something else, Frances McDormand's speech. I thought her speech for winning was another key point of the of the night. When she puts the Oscar down, she has some kick-ass funny lines, and I also say that she's frightening in the best way ever. And she had all the female nominees stand with her. I thought that was very, very impactful and a definite Oscar moment that will go down in history. As far as the awards, the one thing, and I have to go back to it because I always like to take the personal, because everybody watches the Oscars and you talk back to the TV. It is like a sporting event if you get into it.
Sure.
And the one thing that I never really care that much about is Best Song. And, for This Is Me not to win Best Song is a travesty. I don't know if they read that envelope wrong and just didn't want to admit that they read it wrong. I don't know. But Keala, I also fell in love with Keala Settle. Both her performance, singing the song, which I thought was magnificent in the recorded version as well as the version that she did on the Oscars, and also her performance in The Greatest Showman. And I thought her whole story was just amazing, and I thought that was just a sin that they did not win Best Song for that. So that was a big key as far as the awards going, that I was like, ah, damn, who the hell chose that? Bunch of idiots. and God bless the song that won, Remember Me, good for them. But no, This Is Me deserved to win, and that's what it is. I mean, that was the most empowering, emotional, song, especially in this era of negativity, that it should have definitely won, period. As far as that, I thought The Shape of Water was excellent with Guillermo del Toro winning as Best Director. I thought his speech was both humble and also, very, 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 emotional, in the sense that every time I see that man speak, and every time he wins an award or on an interview, I always get the impression that he has an attitude of gratitude, that he's extremely hardworking, and that he is so atypical of what people think is in the film industry, and that's why I like him so much, and he's so talented, and I thought that was a beautiful story as well. I thought The Shape of Water was a great, great movie. I was also thrilled to see Sam Rockwell winning as Best Supporting Actor. I thought his performance in Three Billboards was epic, and I think he definitely deserved it. We touched on it before, but the Best Actress for, Best Supporting Actress, rather, for Allison Janney, in I, Tonya. I mean, she swept all the awards, pretty much all the major awards, and she deserved it because, once again, never has a character made me cringe so much and laugh so hard as her performance as Tonya Harding's mother. Hilarious in the scariest way.
Exactly. She's a very talented actress. I was going to say comedic actress, but she's done obviously some dramatic roles as well, and I can almost hear FDH. Yeah, exactly. I can almost.
The woman has range.
I can hear FDH senior editor Jason Jones screaming all the way from Colorado as he is the world's biggest West Wing fanboy. That don't forget she was in West Wing, so obviously yes. And while I've only
another show I never saw exactly, but I knew she was in it. Yes, only because I know her background.
Right, right. Like
I never turned on.
I've seen it intermittently. I've seen it here and there, and her performance. They had a very talented cast, obviously, and I'm now in the process of watching this great show, Counterpart, on Stars, and one of the guys from The West Wing is on there as well. And they had a great, great cast on West Wing. She was a part of it, and again, very talented, comedic and dramatic actress. And again. But again, duh, these are the ones that are going to be up for the awards here, on the night of awarding for the gravitas in terms of the performances that were out there. I mean, this is, as we've said previously, basically, the Super Bowl, basically, of the profession. I'm going to say, though, as far as on the song, if they got it wrong or not, I'm going to go on a big limb here, John, the way that last year's ended, and that I'm guessing if they read the wrong one, the truth would have come out at some point here. I think we would know that, John.
I'm just saying, and I don't care. I go with my personal opinion. The song is a freaking empowering, motivational anthem. It is a breakout song, not only for movies, but just in general. The performance, the backstory of Kiala Settle adds to that whole performance. It was an amazing takeaway from the movie, especially in the climate that is around today, the message that that song conveys, to not have it win is just a wet fart in the history of award shows, period.
Exactly. And, there are a lot of things that, end up being injustices as far as the way that these awards go, and you won't always
and
have...
And that takes nothing away from the other song. Which I couldn't sing a bar of, but anyway, this is me when I saw Greatest Showman, and this is very rare for a song. But when I saw Greatest Showman the first time, when I went to Goodbye to the Van screening and everything like that, that song, the first time hearing it, sent chills up my spine in a good way. Well, it usually takes even the best of songs to at least you hear it the first time, you go, I like it, it's good. But to have that type of visceral reaction, is very, very rare, and that's me. And of course, Twitter completely agreed with me because everybody said that show was robbed, that song was robbed. And very rarely do I agree with the majority of Twitter, but in that case, we were definitely in agreement. One other big thing about, so we don't miss it, about awards and everything. I love, and I interviewed it myself. Love the fact that Jordan Peele won Best Original Screenplay. I like him as a person, and I think that Get Out is an extremely, as I said before, atypical movie to even be nominated for an Oscar, and the fact that he walked away with Best Original Screenplay is amazing, because I think that that's a movie with a message. I think it's also a movie that crosses the barrier between being a cinematic masterpiece, being nominated for an Oscar, and also being a pop culture winner. And I think it's very rare that you don't often see Star Wars nominated as Best Picture. Ever. I mean, you'll see them get technical awards and everything like that, but that's like a huge box office winner. You didn't see Wonder Woman, which I thought was excellent. I don't think nominated for anything. Maybe some technical award somewhere, but was an excellent movie. But it's not a movie that gets Oscars. Get Out, back in the day, is that type of movie. It's a movie that gets people talking. It's a movie that gets pop culture acclaim. It's a movie that breaks box office records in some ways, that can make a name for a director or a screenplay writer, but doesn't necessarily win major critical awards like the Oscars, and I think that that's a huge breakthrough for somebody like Jordan Peele.
It really is. It was a very well-deserved award for him, and again, it really capped off a very unique evening. When you look back at the annals of the Oscars over a period of time, we're going to remember this one, as we keep saying, for the first one in the immediate aftermath of the, mm-hmm. The whole... I'm blanking on the buzzwords here. The time's up, I guess, is one of the buzzwords. Me too. Now they're coming to mind.
Me too. Yeah, me too. And time's up are the two big ones.
Those are the ones. Yeah, I was blanking there for a second. But in terms of names for different things here, I have to say, as a fan of the old Larry Sanders Show, your show title that you're going to have, that one's fine. I would have been partial to "Hey Now" with Bass Now, but that's just me.
Actually, I don't know how far we can go, but one of the people that works with me on web stuff and SEO stuff and social media stuff, they were like, "Oh, come on, you know the show." They go because it was funny. This came, by the way, after seeing me on the Action Bronson show, and I'm a little off color and irreverent on that show. And Action and I, real name Arian, our buddies and Twitter friends, and we had just had a great time on the show. But he goes, "Come on, you need a show named John Mo," the longer version of MoFo, Bass Now. John blah blah Bass Now. And he goes, "That's the only title I'll accept." He goes, "That's what people call you with," because these people call me that. I mean, because especially like the college fans, the high school guys and stuff like that, who are big fans of Fitness Made Simple and big fans of my Vine videos and Wake Up Words, which are irreverent and but motivational and empowering in a good way. All when they see me in the street, it's John MF and Bass Now. John MF and Bass Now. And they even write it on Twitter. And I'm like, "How did you know that's the name on the birth certificate? That is my God-given, middle name. Or that is my legal middle name." And so my does a lot of the web stuff with me, he loves Right Now with Ace. He actually loves the title Right Now with Ace. He said that is so perfect because right now I could see that being a news show and it's not limited to one topic and it's talking about things that are right now. And it could be anything from pop culture to health, medical, changing your life, wellness, personal achievement, entrepreneurship. It's perfect. But he goes, I am furious that the show is just not John MF and Bass now. Or the other one he would have accepted is the John MF and Bass now show.
Right.
That was the other one he wanted. And he goes, the only one that would run with the title is Viceland. You were so good on Viceland, you've got to get Viceland to offer you a show. And they will probably agree to title it the John MF and Bass now show.
Yeah, I think it would fly there. I think you'd be fine with that. And again. You know, I could see you doing anything on any platform, as you have always proven with this show here. So I greatly look forward to the forthcoming debut of the podcast. And again, as always, my man, a pleasure breaking down the Oscars with you, as it is on any subject. Always a pleasure to have the great John Basedow come walking through the doors of the lounge.
Man, first of all, we're buddies, but your guy reaches out to me every year and does it so, politically correct and so professional. Would you be interested in talking about the Oscars on the show again this year? And this is like the third or fourth time. I'm like, yeah, when and where? You don't have to be so formal. It's a conversation with my buddy Rick. The answer is always going to be yes.
Well, I enjoy it, and I certainly think, again, people that are, tuning in for clips of to hear you or to hear me. It's always some of our best stuff when we're on with each other, I really feel like. And it's really something that I always enjoy, regardless of what the subject matter is going to be. So I look forward to whenever the next time will be. Hopefully we get a chance to get something in before the Emmys. So as I say, good luck with the debut of your show in the near future. Thank you for being on, John. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge Mini Episode number 963.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.